You want to turn that on there, Christina? And where did the clicker go here? So we went to this this little island named Hispaniola. Half of it is Haiti, half of it is the Dominican Republic. And we did some great things there. But before I get into that, there's one thing that just kind of is on my mind. And I've heard some people say, why did you go to Haiti when there's so much need here in our own country? And I think that that can be a fair question. I think it can be a cop-out, too. If you're doing something for people in this country, great. Continue doing it. That's awesome. And we need to do that. But as you hear people talking from the Haiti team, I think you're going to get a little bit of a different picture of what poverty is. We do have poverty here, but there is really nothing compared to what most of the world experiences. And I would just challenge you in your thinking. If you're one of those people that are thinking that way, I'd like to challenge you in that. One of the things, I was just thinking about this earlier, one of the things that really struck me was the Haiti people are very needy people, and when they saw us as Americans, many of them would come up and ask us for things. The kids asked us for things. The adults asked us for things. I had a principal of one of the schools come and find us during our first VBS and ask me if we could support them. I had a few of us had a young man ask us to sponsor him for college. They're very needy people, and they ask for things. But the fact of the matter is they don't have anything. We're here in America, and we've created a very needy class as well. But comparing the two, there just is no comparison. We're the only nation that probably has fat, poor people. I can say that, okay? We're the only nation that probably makes money off of storage units. You know what I'm saying? So anyway, I'd like to challenge your thinking if you think along those lines. So we took this trip to Haiti, and I'm just going to quickly go through some of the things we did, and then I'm going to turn it over to the team. The team is going to talk about some of their experiences and what God has done in their life and through their life. But just to give you an idea, when we went, what I was told we would be doing was different from what we actually did. Communication in Haiti is very different. and the gal that we worked with on the United States side, I think she's been in Haiti too long. She's a wonderful gal, and she organizes all these trips, but she did not communicate clearly to them what we were there for. And so we had to be very, very flexible. And in being flexible, we got to experience a lot of stuff. The first day we were there, we just kind of rested. This is the team, by the way. The only one two that are not here are Patty. She had a previous engagement. And then my cousin Lisa, who is by Patty. Patty's on the left-hand bottom side. Lisa is my cousin from Oregon. She just fit right into the team. It's kind of neat. But the first day we got there, we did a little, just rested. The second day, we went out and we helped lay a foundation for a house that would house. We heard various things, 2 to 4 families. I don't know how many families exactly, but 2 to 4 families. Without going into detail, if you want to know how they lay foundations there, talk to one of these guys because it is unbelievably different than the way we do it here. That was a tough day, but it was a rewarding day. I think we surprised a few of the Haitians because we were willing to get out there. We basically just hauled cement. That's what we did. We did some painting. The Haitian Christian Mission was having a convention this last week. They wanted to spruce things up a little bit, so we did some painting for them. We did buy food. We bought $500 worth of food, and we handed it out. We fed about 150 families. 40 of those tents, which I don't know how many families that represented, but there's about 40 tents out in the back of this mission. They had people living out there. We fed them first, and then we went and fed others. People just started coming off the street as they heard that we were handing out food. We did a couple of vacation Bible schools. The first one was a major flop. The second was awesome. Again, I don't have time to go into detail with that, but There's some bright, shining faces. And then Pastor Louie and I had the opportunity and pleasure, privilege to preach in a couple churches. I got the Mountain Church was cooler than the church he was in. God loves me more. We did a leader seminar. Pastor Lee and I both did. And we had about, I think it was about 20 people there. Yeah, it was about 20 people there. There were some pastors, some of the translators that work at the mission. And there were even a few people that just heard that we were doing this. And so they came in off the street. That was a very good experience. We taught about how to interpret the Bible, how to study and interpret the Bible. The girls worked in the pharmacy. Some of us helped inventory supplies. Melissa played doctor for a day. So we did some of that stuff. And then we did a few other things. But that's basically, they kept us really busy. And we got a really good taste of what the mission does. Now I'm going to stop here and just turn it over to who was first, Ken, and let you hear some firsthand experiences of what went on.
Good morning. Before I start, though, I want to start off with a crazy story. When we first got there, and what I'm supposed to talk about is the culture right now, but it's an interesting story. When we first got there, it was just chaotic. And we finally, after about an hour or so, we finally got in touch with the Dulles, who was at the Haiti Christian Mission. And needless to say, there was not enough room, so Tom and I had to ride in the back of this truck. So we're on the outside of this truck, and I will say, driving in another country is absolutely maddening. I mean, it was crazy how fast this guy was going. I mean, if you were walking on a street and did like this, he would have killed you. I mean, that's how close he was coming to cars. And I'm sitting there on the outside of this truck, and I'm holding the top of it, and I just bend down a little bit, and I'll feel Tom move a little bit, and I'm thinking, if he crashes, I have to jump or something to try to survive. And the funniest thing, though, is I'm sitting there, and the wind is blowing in my face, and I just hear, and I look back at Tom, and he's just like, "This is crazy!" And we were it was absolutely maddening. It's just like, man, this guy is doing like 60 miles an hour. But one of the first things I noticed in the country is just the contrast. It's really a beautiful country, but there is definitely a lot of poverty. This is actually from the roof where we slept. So you could see it's definitely a beautiful country. This was at the second VBS we did, and I'm standing out there, and you can see, the mountains are green and everything, but right in that picture, you see some of the level of poverty out there. There's no running water. It's easy to see, kids walking around with buckets of water, and I don't know how many times they have to do that a day, but it's amazing. They just have buckets of water, and they run all the way down to the main street area and then go way back up in the mountains. These are some of the tents that they're living in. Imagine, in this heat, living out in a tent like that, but then at 100% humidity. It's just amazing at some of the things that we saw while we were there. If you notice, you see this little kid here walking around, and it's really rocky. Everywhere you go, it's just rocks all over the place. And a lot of them don't have shoes. That was some of the things that they asked for when they first meet you. Either money, shoes, or, sandals, or a ball to play soccer. And for me, though, one of the hardest things to see for me was the kids. We had the Haiti Christian Mission is doing so many good things. Before I talk about the kid too, they one of the things that Edwin's told me, and he's the pastor's son, he said, "I like the fact that you as Americans didn't come over here acting like saviors. You came over here as Christian brothers asking, how can we come alongside you to help?" And I heard that, he said that was just such a unique and awesome thing. And they are touching lives in a real way. They're doing food when they have it. They've started orphanages. They're trying to do wells. They're starting schools, all kinds of things. And one of the things that he said to me, he said, I prefer to give out rods than fish. And at first I didn't catch that, but what he's basically saying is, you know, give a man a fish, he eats a day. Teach him how to fish, and he eats for a lifetime. And that's something that, you know, when we go over as Americans, immediately we think we need to just give out money and things like that. But the reality is a mindset change, and really a spiritual change, you know. And it was just, you know, neat talk with him. The last day we were there, we talked probably for about 5 hours. But, you know, one of the hardest things for me to see was, as I said, it's the Haiti Christian Mission, and people come in when there's hardships. And a man came in and said that there are two handicapped children up in the mountains, and their parents had died, and could the Christian Mission come take a look at them and see if there was anything she could do? And so Betty asked if I wanted to go, and me, Liz, and Brandon went up there. And when we first pulled up, you know, there's just sand and dirt and heat all over the place. And immediately when, you know, the truck pulls in, I looked to the left and I saw a little boy. He was just naked, sitting outside, you know. And I thought, well, you know, because you see that. You see people taking showers wherever there's water right out in the open, you know. So I was like, well, you know, I don't know what's going on here. But Betty asked the lady, you know, where's the little girl? And this little girl came out from behind this building, and she, you know, she's just crawling on her hands, and dragging her body across the ground. And it was just really, it was hard to see. It was, you know, and Betty talked to her, and then she went and talked to the little boy, and they all he had really was a shirt, and so they put a shirt on him. But while we're talking to him, you can see open wounds, flies, ants, I mean, just eating away at him. You know, and, you know, your heart just goes out, and you want to do something. And, you know, I talked to Betty, and she's like, you know, it's hard to see this for the first time, but there's kids like this all over this country. And, you know, your immediate thing is, well, how could I give money to help? But she says sometimes that's a hindrance to them, because you would give them money and leave, and it could be taken away, you know. So it's just, for me, I mean, I've always had a grateful heart for what God has done for me, and, you know, I have a beautiful marriage and healthy kids and all that kind of stuff. But you really get a sense of just how blessed we are as a nation, you know. So I you know, we're Brian's going to talk about it later. We're definitely going back, and I would just challenge you to pray about it. That's something that you're really thinking about doing. It's hard work, but it's definitely fulfilling. And you know that you're doing what God called you to do.
Hi. I'm going to talk about the children that we saw. And bear with me if you can. I feel a little emotional. We got there and I look, and the little girl's crawling out, and I thought to myself, why is this girl crawling? Because she looked like she was about 7 years age. She looked like she was 7 years old, and she was just crawling, and then I realized that she was paralyzed. And, you know, my heart was like, that sucks, because she has to drag her body on rocks and rubble and all kinds of sharp things, and it's got to be tough. And when I heard her story about how she was affected by the earthquake, my heart just felt so much pain for her and a sorrow. When she was outside playing in her front yard, her yard or whatever, and when the earthquake happened, her parents were in the house, and her house came down, and they both died. And she was out there for a while before someone came and found her. And I'm just thinking to myself, what would I do in this position if I was paralyzed and the two people that took care of me the most and loved me the most and that I loved died, and I couldn't do anything about it. And I couldn't get away from what was going on. I honestly feel like I would give up on life, and just I would blame God for it. I think I would have blamed God or something. And when we saw the boy, he looked so sad. They both looked so sad and so much pain. And when I looked at his legs, they were just covered in bugs and like wounds. And it was just so hard to see. And I kept putting myself in their position, and then I kept remembering, or not remembering, but like reminding myself that I'm lucky because I get to run and walk and play soccer, and I take all those things for granted, and I love those things, and I love them even more now that I've seen what happens there, or what I saw. And that impacted me the most of the whole trip. It taught me that the things I complain about and whine about and think are huge problems are just so small compared to other people's problems. And that night, when we went back to eat dinner, I could barely even touch my food, and my hands were shaking. I couldn't control them. It was just so hard, and I cried myself to sleep that night. And I really thank God for everything I have, and I pray that we can do something to help change their lives for the better.
Probably the first thing I need to tell you is I had some very selfish motives for wanting to go to Haiti. I wanted to get my focus back. About 4 years ago, I left Michigan on a spiritual pilgrimage, and my intention in coming out here, and I didn't even really know where I was going to end up, but my intention was to find a simple life of worship. And as it turns out, I don't understand the meaning of simple. But Haiti was an eye-opener. I want to talk to you a little bit about the devastation from the earthquake there, and I'm just going to talk to you a little bit about that. You know, I don't watch the news, so I didn't really know what I was in for. I knew that the country had been devastated, that the primary, that the earthquake was centered in Port-au-Prince, which was a capital city, but I didn't really know. I've never seen an earthquake. I've never seen a tornado. I've never seen that kind of devastation before. And I think what was most shocking about it was just how many people are still living here. And after 5.5 months, it doesn't even look like they've done anything, you know, other than obviously the tent cities have sprung up, acres of tent city. And approximately 150,000 people homeless living in tents or along the back roads. They were just lined with these little wooden and steel shacks. But, and really for folks in Haiti, that's, you know, not, I don't, they probably didn't, even when they had apartments or whatever, they were like little one room, you know, apartments where they, you know, did everything they need to do through the day. So there's thousands, tens of thousands of tons of rubble and people living in and around it, kind of like after 5.5 months, that's what they've become accustomed to now. And I asked at one point, you know, how the people had adapted psychologically to this kind of devastation. And you know what? They kind of like moved through it like almost as though it didn't affect them in any way. because they're so used to not having anything. The picture at the top is the presidential palace, and, you know, we've heard a lot about that. The tent city at the bottom is right across the street from the presidential palace. That's the national park. And this probably shows more than anything else just this disparity, you know, this lavish palace, which now sits in ruins, and then across the street from it, just thousands of people basically living in tents with nothing. I think the hardest thing about Haiti for me to grasp was just the level of poverty. You know, here in this country, I think the poverty line is below $18,000 a year. And in Haiti, the average income is about $500 a year. So when you begin to grasp the fact that people, you know, they don't have shoes, they don't have running water, just simple everyday things that we take for granted. Mostly the people were clothed, and we saw this disparity at the church service because people were very well dressed. You know, for Sunday service, people break out their very nicest clothing, and they have nice clothing, but that's the only thing they use it for. You know, it's just reserved for that. And the rest of the day, they pretty much look like they're dressed by the Salvation Army. And the irony there is all the clothes that I bought to take to wear there and then leave there, I got at the Salvation Army. So it kind of like, you know, it wasn't like anything special for them, you know. Most of the damage from the earthquake was centered right in the capital city, and we only kind of like went in and out of the city three times. The mission is kind of just a short ways from the Dominican Republic border. So there wasn't very much damage there, and instead it's kind of like countryside, and there's a lot of construction going on there, a lot of houses that are going up, some little two-room shacks, and some of them are like mansions. So, and it, again, it just shows you the disparity between those who have and those who have not. And in terms of the cleanup in the city, there's, you know, different countries have sent a lot of heavy equipment in, and it sits basically at customs because nobody wants to pay the tariff taxes on it. And the government doesn't really want the stuff to come in because with so many people in the city who are essentially unemployed, it's more economical to employ Haitians to do all the work by hand. But it also just explains why after 5.5 months there hasn't been a whole lot of change, because to, you know, the massive concrete that's there, because all the buildings are made out of concrete, they have to break up in small enough pieces that they can carry it by hand and then figure out how to cart it away somewhere. So it's just been a very slow process, painstakingly slow. And I think a lot of that is one of the reasons why they don't seem to have a lot of initiative in terms of trying to get it done and try to put the city back together. So let's see, who's next?
I made some notes because I will get sidetracked. For those, and part of the reason why I'm kind of going through notes too is one of the things Ken kind of talked about or didn't really get into is the mission. One of the things that Ken's going to do is help put a website together for the Haiti Christian Mission. And, you know, we went there and we helped and it was great. And I just, but I, you know, kind of God laid on my heart, well, what can I do when I get back home? And yeah, I'm going to go back but one of the things I'd like to do is I've set up going to the churches here locally, and I've set up with four other churches just to kind of go and give a 10 or 15 minute presentation on Haiti. But I just want to give you guys some stats. Haiti's about roughly the size of Maryland, and it has 9 million people and 9 million reasons why we need to be helping out. Voodoo is the number one religion, followed by Roman Catholicism. It's the poorest country on the Western Hemisphere, and that was before the earthquake. Dave alluded, $500 a year is the income, $10 a week is what people live on. 100,000 to 230,000 people were killed. 3 million were affected. Brian's going to kind of talk about some of that. I took we had a Sunday where the interpreters and the people from the mission took us into Port-au-Prince. And Port-au-Prince is kind of like on a side of a hill like San Diego where you see, you know, it's just rolling hills. But anyway, we're driving in, and I started taking photos, and I took a picture of this this building here, and this is right underneath. I mean, this building is right above a major thoroughfare. And I'm just amazed that this thing's there. And we continue on, and our interpreter stops at an area where there was a university, and I'm going to show you the picture, and I'll probably see if I can come back to it here. This is just about a half an acre. Not real big, maybe an acre. But still, if you guys can imagine, and we stop to see this, they're cleaning things up. They've talked about it. You don't see any heavy equipment. They're all doing it by hand. But there was a 9-story building here, and all the buildings, as Dave said, are made of cement. The roofs are cement, 4 to 6 inches thick. And at any rate, this 9-story building had 3,000 students. It all came down, and 3,000 people died in that little one-acre lot right there. And what kind of, I'm sitting here listening to the interpreter and not thinking anything of it, and I'm taking this picture. And he said, that dirt that you see, the reason why that's there is they had to make makeshift graves. And basically, there's those students are underneath that mound of dirt. And that picture that I showed you first of the building that was above the street, I want you guys to remember that because I'm going to come back to that. But as we went through, Haitian Christian Mission started with one church. Now they're at 50-plus, and I think Brian's going to talk about that. This is one of the schools on the left that they had in Port-au-Prince. And one of the gentlemen that was with us was teaching with some students. And when the earthquake hit, he had to jump out. And as you can imagine, all that rubble you can't see. You can't see, you know, everything's just black. But he tells a story, but I think I'd like to, you know, I'm not, you know, as we show the devastation, the plus and the hope is this mission, Haitian Christian Mission, set up makeshift classrooms right next to their to the school, and they're continuing on. So I was glad to see that. Ken showed a picture. Tent cities all over, and Brian's going to kind of talk about that, but it just amazed me that so many families are living like this in and around Port-au-Prince. And the one thing I'm not going to, you can't show this picture, but right when I took this photo, we went probably another 100 feet, and I kind of looked back to my right, and none of the team had seen this, and as Ken alluded, we're all riding in the back of trucks and, you know, working our way through, and anyway, I look back, and there was about a 35-year-old man, 30, 35, sitting down, totally naked, and the world, hustle and bustle of the world just going around. And, you know, that probably bothered me, probably more than a lot of things, just to see the state of the plight of Haiti, I guess, to see that, that, you know, survival of the fittest, basically. You know, he may have had some mental, you know, challenges there or whatever, but just the fact that everybody was just walking by like nothing was going on, that just really bothered me. The picture that I showed you guys at the first, and I didn't realize this, but as we were coming back through, we stopped underneath that building that you saw hanging down. The interpreter pointed out, and I didn't realize this when I had taken the picture on my way through, there was a human leg sticking out of that. Can't see it in the picture unless you really zoom in, but I kind of wanted to show that because that's going on, and people are still trying to live and do all that they're doing around all this and just, you know, kind of immune to it all. A lot of money's been donated, I think $580 million. And, you know, everybody talks and about the poverty there. I guess I would end this with, I was really glad to see what the mission's doing. I think that, not just to make this an anti-government statement, they have their object, what they're trying to do. But I really feel like, you know, we can keep praying and go and be a part of, and Amanda's going to talk about, if she's here, what what impacted her, but I'm glad to see what the missions is still doing. Thanks.
Hey guys, I'm going to talk a little bit about the kids and how they affected me on the trip. That was definitely the biggest thing for me because I've always had a passion for working with children, and we got to meet so many kids, and I completely fell in love with every single one of them. They were just amazing, and every kid had his own story and his own experiences and how the earthquake affected them, and everybody was affected, everybody, and it was just amazing to get to know these kids, and so it was cool to get to play with them, and we just got to love them and hang out with them and give them attention that they normally don't get. Most of them, a lot of them don't have parents, or if they do, they don't get that one-on-one because it's high stress all the time. What are we going to eat? What are we going to wear? You know, it's not like how my childhood was where, you know, I just go outside and play and I didn't have a care in the world, and these kids are worried about what they're going to eat. And I got to do a Sunday school. I got to like lead it and talk to the kids, and it was really cool because I got to talk to them about worrying and how we don't need to worry because God takes care of us. And it was hard to talk to them about it because, you know, I'm telling them that God's going to feed them and God's going to clothe them and God's going to make sure that, you know, that they're taken care of. And it's hard to tell that to somebody who isn't being taken care of. It was really hard. And I just want to talk about some of the kids that impacted me the most. You see this girl right here, she's wearing a little jean jacket, and she really affected me because we were trying to get her to smile. We met her when we were working on the house, and her and some of her siblings came over, and there was maybe seven of them, and we were tickling her and making funny faces, and she couldn't crack a smile, and it was sad because you can see the look on her face right there that she's sad. And how old is she? Was 4 or 5, and she's sorry. I just that really broke my heart. Her and her siblings, we were kind of talking to them through a translator, and we got them to ask them how old they were, and they didn't know how old they were. They knew how old the youngest girl was, 3, but none of the other ones knew their ages, and that was really, for some reason, just hearing them say they didn't know how old they were, that was crazy. So here's some more of the kids we got to see just walking in the streets, and they want their picture taken, they'd pose for the photos, you know, and they were so excited to just, you know, get to have some attention and some one-on-one, and it was cool because we got to, like, I taught some of the kids how to play Ring Around the Rosie, and they were having so much fun, you know, and me and Katie, we would be holding their hands, and they would come up and they would fight over who got to hold hands with us. And they would try and break the other kids' hands off and say, you know, no, it's my turn, because they wanted that love so much that they haven't gotten ever. And so, you know, I before I went on this trip, I didn't really feel like I had a purpose in my life, and I didn't know what I wanted to do or where God was taking me. And just being on this trip and seeing these kids, I feel like it's 100% clear in my mind that the very reason that I'm on the earth is for these kids. I love them, and I can't wait to go see them again.
Okay. When I went on this trip, I really didn't know what to expect at all. And the people in Haiti are just so loving, and the children, they love attention, and they really want to be loved, like Amanda said. And we did two VBSs, and the first one didn't go as well as we wanted it to, but the second one went really good, and... Oops, wrong way. There we go. Okay. So this is me helping the kids with their craft, and they made David's pouch, and they had to kind of weave the yarn through the holes, and we got to help them with that, and they were like the preschoolers, so they were 3 and 4, and so I weaved a little bit of the yarn in the holes, and then they were able to do it, and it was really cool that they like caught on that fast, and they're so young, and after we were done with the VBS, we had brought a suitcase full of toothbrushes and toothpaste and jump ropes, bouncy balls, and shoes. And I took some flip-flops back to the preschoolers to pass out, and they all surrounded me and were trying to grab the flip-flops from my hands, and they were yelling, "Sandals, sandals." And one of the translators actually had to pull me out of the group because I was getting like surrounded by kids. And one little girl, she didn't receive any shoes because we ran out, and she started crying because she didn't receive any and we had run out. And I have 4 pairs of flip-flops amongst other shoes, and we are just so lucky to have so much, and we take it for granted. And that little girl probably only had a pair of shoes that she was wearing, and to see her crying over that, it was just really touching.
When we pulled into Haiti, I noticed how little of the services that they have there that we have here. Kingman is full of doctor's office and dentist office and Walmart, Walgreens, CVS. You know, you can go anywhere and buy a bottle of aspirin. You can go to any doctor or dentist and have things checked out. And when we got there, I did find one dentist office. And the hours are limited. You know, you show up. If you can be treated, you're treated. And if not, well, you go home and hope you survive. The clinic, there was a clinic below the mission where we stayed, and it was open from 8 to 2 every day. And the people were lined up. They were just hundreds of people that would come every day. And a nurse would triage them to see, you know, how serious was their illness, what was wrong with them. Line them up in order of who's the most desperate, and whoever was there to see them would see them. So there was a team of doctors that had left a few days before I worked in there, which was the last day that we were there. And there was really no one there to work in the clinic, so I volunteered. And it was really the highlight of the whole trip for me. It was the most exciting. It was the most rewarding. And I lost count of how many people I saw that day. I saw all kinds of illnesses, sicknesses, infections, and cuts and scrapes, and all kinds of stuff that I got to bandage and clean and take care of. And I really did get to play doctor for the day. I had to give medicine, and so it was fun. We take for granted the items that we have available for us here in America. They can't go to a corner store and buy aspirin or Pepto-Bismol or anything. So when I walked into the pharmacy and saw the medicine that they had available, and that's all we had to work with, aspirin, Tylenol, Pepto, that was it. So when we had people come in and say, I have an abscess, I have this, I have that, and there was some pretty nasty stuff that I saw, and trying to figure out, okay, which do I give them, Tylenol or aspirin? You know, there's not a big choice of what to give. And So, yeah, it was an experience just trying to find stuff to help them out with. I had an interpreter that worked with me every day or during that day. He would bring the patients in and say, what's the problem? And they'd tell them their story, and he would try to translate it so I would understand. And then I would ask questions back and forth, like, okay, how long has it hurt? How long have you been having this or that? Or, you know, just kind of trying to get more information. And like one example, we had a little boy came in, and his cheek was just swollen. His mouth had abscessed. And the first thing that pops into my mind is, you know, let's start swishing some salt water and try to draw some of that out. Well, they don't have salt, and they don't have water. So that's not a common thing that they can even do. And so I went and got Tylenol and trying to search for stuff. Got Tylenol, got some antibiotics, and had to tell people, okay, if this doesn't work, you know, in 4 days, I want you back here in 4 days. You come back, this is not working. And a big thing that seemed to occur was they would say, I came in last week and something, they gave me something. I don't know what it was, but it worked or it didn't work. But trying to figure out what it was so you don't repeat the same mistake or give them something that would counteract what they had before, that was, you know, you're just kind of praying that you're giving them what you can that will work. When the clinic closed at 2, everyone was gone. There was a couple people lingering that hadn't been seen, and we did our best for them, gave them some Motrin, sent them home. We went shopping that afternoon, and we came back for dinner, and Betty, the pastor's wife, said, hey, there's going to be a baby born tonight. You want to go watch? Do you want to go help? So Lisa, Brian's cousin, and I, we put our scrubs on, and we went down, and it was about 7 o'clock, 7 or 7:30, and we showed up, and they were waiting for us, like, okay, they're here, let's do this, and gave us the seat of honor and asked us, did we want to deliver the baby? And we did our best to hold her hand and wipe her brow and tell her she was doing a good job. And this was her third live birth. She had 2 babies before, 1 abortion, and this was her third baby. And they were saying that she was too young. And she delivered the baby. She had a few complications, but everything came out okay. And she got up and walked over to the clinic, you know, from 7 o'clock to 10 o'clock at night, and she was done. And the next morning when we left, she was leaving with her baby. There was no extra care. There was no extra help for her. It was just Lisa, myself, and the 2 midwives. And those are the 2 midwives right there. And they really had their work cut out for them, too. They had delivered over 100 babies in the last year, either at the clinic or at their house or at the houses of the moms. I think that just one of the things that really impressed on me was how fortunate we are, even though we're griping and complaining about Obamacare or we don't have insurance or our insurance is too high. Even if we have nothing, we can still go to the hospital. We can still be seen. We can still be treated. And, yeah, we might get a really huge bill later on, but we're not dead. And we do have options. We can call our friends for help and say, hey, you know, you got a Motrin in your purse or whatever it is. They don't have that. They can't go to the store. They can't get anything like that. And so that was just one of the things that really struck me was, you know, I really need to start taking care of myself so I can keep doing things and just trying to help them. So that's it.
Ken said it earlier, one of the things they were surprised about was the fact that we'd come to help. My whole view of mission trips is not taking a group to evangelize, and I know that may sound kind of weird. Missionaries evangelize. When we go as a small group, we go to support missionaries that maybe the church is supporting or you know, missionaries that we know or something like that. So when we went to the Haitian Christian Mission, the idea was just to help out in whatever way we could. I mean, there's been this devastation. There's been one of the things I was told was that there is nobody in Haiti that has not been affected by the earthquake. No one. They've had a relative or a friend die or has been displaced or something, So there's nobody that has not been affected by that earthquake. So for us just to go and help, that was just an awesome thing. I know that Ken and Tom, they didn't say it, but I think one of the highlights was working with those guys doing construction, just getting dirty with them. And, boy, I think those guys so appreciated the fact that, like you said, you know, we didn't come to be saviors. We came just to help out in whatever way we could. There's so many different organizations that are going into Haiti right now and going into different third world countries, and they're just throwing things at the people. And unfortunately, Haiti is in an awful position because this has been going on for years, even before the earthquake. They've had these organizations come in, and they're just throwing things at them. And what, I mean, it's so apparent whenever we'd go out in public, you'd have kids come up to us and they start asking us for balls, or they start asking us for our shoes or our shirts. And it got so frustrating that I started asking them for things when they asked me for something, just to get it. You know, they view us Americans as being these super rich Americans that have everything, you know, because so many people have come in and have come in and given them. And this is the mentality that they have. And this is one of the things that has got to be dealt with. Yes, there's poverty. Yes, there is hunger. There is a need for clothing. There is a need for jobs, different things like that. But there is a need, number one, for Jesus Christ in these people's lives. Number two, there's a need for them to understand that they can do it, that they can work, that they can support themselves, that they don't need to be given everything. And this is what the Haitian Christian Mission is doing. And one of the things I was so impressed with, Haitian Christian Mission was started by this couple here. It's hard to see, I'm sorry, but the guy up in the left-hand corner is Stephen Profet and his wife Betty. They grew up in Haiti. They had schooling, Stephen had schooling here in the States. But when they decided to go back to Haiti and start this ministry, they only had $120 in their pocket or something like that. It was $120, $150. So that's all the money that they have. 30 years later, they've got this huge mission. They've got over 50 churches all throughout Haiti. They've got schools. They've got orphanages they're starting. They're doing relief work. They're planning a university right now. One of the cool things was I had one of the coach of the school that is there on the missions ground came to me, and he asked me if we could give him some money because they were doing a tournament, a soccer tournament. And they needed some trophies, and they needed some balls. So at the time, I didn't understand what he was saying. I thought they were just talking about the school. But what he was talking about is this program that they started. It's called Play It Forward. And they have they put on this huge tournament, and people from the island enter their teams into this tournament. And then they will give trophies for the winning team and stuff like that. And so they just had that tournament last week. In fact, an American girls group came and played in the tournament. This whole Play It Forward is a ministry. They're going to build this university, and they want to get people interested in what is going on. So they're starting with this soccer program. They're going to build this sports complex first, and then they're going to build the university to draw attention to it, because their goal is to educate the people. They want to educate the people about Jesus Christ. They want to educate the people and help them to earn a living, support themselves, you know. And so we're thrilled to be partnering with them. I guess what I'm saying is, one thing that I learned is, I saw the devastation that happened in the Philippines that really affected me, and then this happened in Haiti, and my first reaction is just to throw money. Well, I'm discovering that's not. I mean, yes, giving money is an important thing, but giving it to the right organizations, and the organization like Haitian Christian Mission is one of those right organizations to support, because they're doing it the right way. They're making the people that are in the tents, but the 40 or so families that are in the tents on their property, they are making them work and earn what they're being given. When we came and gave our stuff, they made sure to tell them it was a gift from the Americans. They didn't want the people to get the idea that they were just getting the handout. So they said it was a gift from us. Anything else that they have to work for. There's a little girl I just fell in love with. Her name was Luvni. I thought it was Rufni, and it turned out to be Luvni. And she was just a sweetheart. It was hard to communicate. She knew some English. I had thought that she, through communicating with her, that her father and brother had died in the earthquake. To come to find out, I received an email yesterday. That's not quite the case. But her father is not in her life. And it's just her mom. They're living out in this tent in the back. When we went and handed out food, I was shocked because we would get a glimpse into some of these tents that they were living in, and there was nothing in them. There was just a bare tent floor, no blankets, no clothes. Pretty much I think what they had on is what they wore. Some people had a little bit more than others, but I mean it was pretty hard. I fell in love with Luvni. She was just wonderful. And I've been talking to Edwins about helping her family out. And talking to Edwins, and Edwins is the one on the right side. He's the one that has kind of taken over the mission. He's the son of Betty and Stephen. I knew that I couldn't just give money. And so I asked him, how much money do I need to give in order to provide wages for her? Because that's what they want. So they're going to put her to work, and I'm going to pay for her wages so that Luvni can have a decent life. So, we're going to be planning another trip in December. It's going to be over Christmas. It's open to anybody. We'll have some sign-up sheets here in the future. Be thinking about if this is something that you want to do. It's really made an impact on all 11 people that went, and it'd make an impact on you as well. I want to let Pastor Louis finish up here.
There's a couple of things I wanted to add, and then wanted to thank a couple of people as well. And we're going to have a dramatic reenactment as well here, second service, of what happened first service. But, you know, one of the things that struck me on this trip, it was interesting because it helped me tighten my focus on what I think God is calling me to do in mission trips. You guys know that I've been to a lot of different places in the last 8 years. And I realized on this trip really answered a question for me because, you know, I've had a lot of guys, and just for a minute, guys, I want to talk to you, the men out here especially. A lot of guys have come up to me and said, well, I can't go on those mission trips. I can't teach. I can't do anything. I can't go. Well, we found a place where you can go. Because when they build those homes, it mostly consists of carrying big, huge rocks and dropping them. And then they smash some of them into slightly smaller rocks, and they put them in there, and then they dump a cement on them, and then, believe me, it's hard work, and you can do it. All you big, strong guys that like to work hard, this is the trip for you. And in the process of doing that, and whatever else that you end up doing, painting, or who knows, I don't know what else they're going to do. You know, I spent probably most of the trip painting. I'm not a great painter, but hey, you know, that God will use you, and it will change you. The powerful thing about mission trips is not just that you're helping them and blessing them. But, you know, Jesus said it's more blessed to give than receive, and you will live that out there because you will not come back the same. It will impact you. It will change you. And we see that in all of the people that went, I think. In particular, I wanted to point out the kids, as we call them, over there. You guys should be so proud of these three. They were awesome. They were amazing. And Mandy didn't even mention that the Sunday school she did, she volunteered to do. Because Pastor Brian and a couple of lightweights got to go up in the mountains where it was cool. And the rest of us stayed down in the heat to suffer for Jesus. And we realized, oh, hey, we've got this Sunday school. And I'm thinking, thank God I have to preach because at least that's my out. And she just volunteered to do it. And Melissa said, oh, I'll help you. And we sent them off with 8,000 kids. And I thought, well, hope we see you again. If not, it's been nice knowing you. And they went off, and it was just amazing. And Katie was so great, and Brandon worked really hard, and he also watched out over people, and it was just, you should be so proud of these guys. I really am proud of them. have a lot of respect for them as well. And that goes for everybody that went with us. There were three people in particular I wanted to thank, and one was Karen Jensen. Karen and Shane were not here today, so I'm going to present them with their little hat and T-shirt Wednesday at my small group, because they're in my small group. But Karen originally wanted to go. They found out early they couldn't go, but instead of doing what most people would have done and saying, "No, well, I can't go, so okay, I'll see you later," she stayed and she worked with us and she organized things, and without her, we wouldn't have raised probably two-thirds of what we ended up raising. She worked really hard. And Mandy's mom, Ruth, also was the one who came up with the shirts like you see Pastor Brian wearing. And because of the contacts she made there, in a couple of weeks, we're going to be sharing with you some information on getting church T-shirts as well, or maybe even button-up shirts. We'll do that later. But the last person I wanted to thank real quick was Pastor Brian. He worked really hard on this. You know, when we first talked about doing this, it was great, and then he got the information, and he wanted to do it, and I'm always happy to let other people work, and so I can just relax and take it easy. So I just said, yeah, go for it, and I can, you know, he did almost all the work that took us on this trip, and I really wanted to thank him. And so I had Krista present this to you first service, but come on up here and do your dramatic reenactment of what happened in first service. I want to see if you can still do the facial expression. Yeah, the bag's mine. You get the rest. Yeah, took him a little while to tear it open first service, but here we go. Yes, there we go. That's pretty close. Show him what it is.
Yeah, it's a Kindle. Oh.
We've been talking about Kindles for about a year and a half. For those of you who don't know what a Kindle is, it's an electronic, it's an e-book reader from Amazon.com. And we've been talking about it for a long time, because you can put like 1,500 or 15,000, I don't know how many books, on that little dude, and you can download them in like a minute. And so when you're traveling, you've got like, what's that weigh, about a couple of ounces, instead of carrying all the books and, you know, weighs you down. And so when we got home, I'd already talked to Melissa ahead of time about this to set it up to get some money from everybody, and then I'd pay the rest. And so we got home, and Brian said, yeah, I want to do it this next Sunday right away. So I'm like, ooh. So I said, I better hurry up. So I ordered it on Amazon, and they send you the confirmation email, and I forwarded that to Melissa, and then I took off to go do some stuff. And a couple hours later, I get home, and I check my email, and she says, oh, I already ordered him one. I'm like, oh, this isn't real good. So back to Amazon. Oh, you can't cancel it. Too late. We're processing the order. But you can return it. Okay. The only problem with that is it actually has to be in my hand before I return it. I have wanted one of these just as much as he has, if not more, for just as long. So guess what happened? I kept it. Bad pastor. So now we both have one. Now for Christmas, you know what to get us. Get those little gift cards from Amazon. We're on it. Okay, so anyway, just in closing, I just want to say it was a great trip. You can talk to Brian or anybody else. If you want to go on this next trip, please consider it. Please pray about it, because I guarantee you God will do something great in your life. I want to just close in prayer, so if you just bow your heads with me. Heavenly Father, I thank you for the people from this church that have dared to step out of their comfort zone, to step out in faith when they went to Romania. And for the team that went to Haiti. And Father, we don't know where you might be calling us to go. Lord, I hope to go back to Myanmar early next year. And we hope to go to Haiti again. And who knows what else will lie in our future. God, I just pray that you will help us to let you change us as you work through us to change others. That we could not only go across the world and touch people's lives, but that we will come back here, different people, energized people, filled with your Spirit, so that we can change Kingman as well. Use us, Lord, as instruments of your peace and love. And we ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.